As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I'm down to dunk.
And I'm down to dunk. I'm down to dunk. This is J-Dub and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lindy Waters, and I'm down to dunk.
I'm Mike Muscala, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Jay Will, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Kenneth Williams, and I'm down to dunk.
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to dunk.
Will you say this is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort?
This is Lou Dort, and I'm down to Dort.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me, as always, on Wednesdays is my good friend Alex Spears. Alex, oh, what's up?
What's up, Andrew?
Oh, nothing much. Just trying to get into the spirit of Thanksgiving over here.
And how could you not? You know what I'm doing this year? I am smoking a turkey for the first time. And I'm doing it on just a basic Weber kettle grill.
Wow. You're watching some YouTubes to do that.
Yes, I'm brining it right now for 24 hours.
Nice.
And tomorrow I will smoke it using the Smokinator.
Wow.
An accessory for the Weber grill.
That's great.
Very excited.
We every year order a smoked turkey from the Greenberg Turkey Company that burned down during COVID. But they're back.
No.
They're back. Gobblegobble.com. Not a sponsor, but go check it out.
Gobblegobble.com.
Pretty great.
And do they come, you just have to reheat it?
Yeah. Yeah, it comes frozen, so you got to let it thaw out. But it's delicious. It's great. I think this is like 8 years running or something like that.
We're a tradition.
Doing the Gobblegobble.com. Oh, yeah. It's great. Any favorite Thanksgiving foods besides smoked turkey?
So I can't do dairy. And so for the longest time, I had just given up on mashed potatoes because typically, you know, you got to put some butter in there.
Have the butter.
And
have the cream.
And milk. You know, I would always use milk when I was growing up.
Yeah, man.
I have since found a recipe that is incredible. And it requires no milk. It requires no butter. Not even vegan butter. Mm. All it is olive oil and roasted garlic.
Mm.
And it tastes as good as any mashed potatoes I've ever
had. That sounds pretty good.
And so that's my new fave. That's what I make like when we're doing Friendsgiving.
Wow, nice. Yeah, that sounds great. I go for the sweet potatoes. I go for the stuffing. I'm fine with turkey. Turkey's fine. Yeah, then eating any kind of pie. I don't discriminate. Any kind of pie is good for the most part.
That's good. I have no dinner or no dessert prepared for my Thanksgiving dinner.
None. Wow.
Sugar-free.
Wow, sugar-free for Thanksgiving.
And you froze, Andrew. Andrew's frozen. I am not.
Am I still frozen or am I back?
No, you're back now.
Okay,
back
all right, now. Good. I'm like, what is going on here? I don't know why that's happening. Speaking of, I don't know why that's happening, the Thunder lost to the Knicks the other night.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing.
Yeah.
Not like in the grand scheme of things, but just as a game, I have experienced that type of game before where you feel like yes, it's not their best offensive performance ever, but it's good enough to end in a close game, and yet they just could not get a stop.
And it wasn't
at all.
And it wasn't for a lack of like defensive effort either.
That's what I think too. Because I was when went back and was watching it, Jalen Brunson's shot chart was absurd. It was stupid. he took I want to say it was 12 mid-range shots.
Yeah.
And they were either floaters or they were like right at the nail. And he went 11 for 12 on those
mid-range shots. He missed one shot from two. One. And
stupid.
They were all contested.
Yeah. Because when I went back, I was thinking in my head, oh, I wonder if Josh was guarding him a lot. Like, I wonder if that's what I'm going to see. No.
No.
It was like Kenrich and Dort every single time.
Kenrich and Dort. And Shea was like right on him for one of them. That felt like, oh, okay, great. That's a stop. I mean, like, I thought that as I'm watching it happen right in front of me. And no.
And no.
No.
I mean, shout out to him. Did you see that? I retweeted it today. This guy, he made a chart of all the teams in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And for each player who has had a season high in points against them, they get one dot.
Yeah.
And OKC was second in terms of most players who have had their season high against them, which, you know, in the Knicks game, it was Jalen Brunson.
Uh-huh.
Although RJ Barrett was only like 2 points off of his season
Barrett
high.
Barrett was awesome in that game.
As well.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, going back like Javon Carter, I think there were multiple Bucks, like Bobby Portis, I think had his season high.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this defense is interesting what has happened because yes, I went back when I was rewatching that going in thinking, I want to understand why the defense has gotten worse. Why are they suddenly, because Baze is back now blocking shots, had three blocks in that game.
Yeah. Three blocks in like his first 6 minutes of the game.
And so I was trying to, and you can't base it on one game, but I was just trying to see, like, was there anything from that Knicks game that would clue me in as to what's going on? No, I don't really feel like there was.
Nope.
And I have some, and I even went back and looked at the stats. So I just want to give you some stats about what has changed. So I separated it into the first 10 games of the season and then the last 7 games.
Yep.
I chose the first 10 games. Basically, that was when Baze went out, as you know, it's just any marker to choose. Baze went out. We seem to notice that the defense got worse. So in the first 10 games, they were 7th in defense, 27th in offense. In the last 7 games, 28th in defense, 4th in offense. So had a complete flip on the offense and defensive end.
Yep.
Minus 2.4 net rating in those first 10 games. Mm-hmm. Only minus 0.3 rating in the last 7 games.
Yeah.
So they've overall been better in terms of, you know, points scored versus their opponents per 100 possessions. Opponent shooting. Now, this is where I expected to see some big changes.
Yeah.
And in some respects, there were. The opponent shooting from three has gone from 34.7% up to 37.3%. That is basically all in corner threes, though, because the above the break threes are pretty close. It's 35.1 versus 36.4. Corner threes, though, opponent shooting has gone from 35.3% to 41.7%. Which is a pretty big jump.
That's a big chunk of points. Yeah.
They're actually allowing fewer corner threes in this recent stretch.
Interesting.
Because that was one of the things I was wondering is, like, are they giving up worse shots? Like, what does their opponent shot profile look like?
Uh-huh.
Honestly, it's arguably better than what it was in those first 10 games. Like, they're allowing two fewer corner threes per game.
Mm-hmm.
They're what teams are shooting in the restricted area in these last 7 games, 60.7%. That's the third worst in the NBA.
Hmm.
So they're actually doing well around the rim. They're giving up fewer corner threes. They're giving up more above the break threes. Really the only big change that I could see just from like a general, like, you know, I didn't get into like nitty gritty type of shots, was just that teams are shooting slightly better on corner threes. I guess that's, I shouldn't say slightly better. They're shooting better.
Quite a
bit
better.
That's 6 percentage points better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there wasn't like some amazing drop off. Like even things like deflections, you know, those are all holding steady. Like some of these like hustle markers are all basically the same. So I'll be honest, I don't really understand it just yet. About, because this isn't just like a slight drop off. This is from one of the better defenses in the league to a bottom five defense in the league. So, yeah. I mean, I'm guessing it's just like randomness, who they've played, I guess you just have to chalk it up to that? Or do you feel like there's something that has fundamentally changed about the defense?
I just think that this is the way of a young team. It's like 10 games, you're going to have them play, you know, really well as a defensive team. The next 10 games are this. Like, the volatility of a young team is high. And to, like, predict what a young team is going to do from, like, game to game or from, like, this 10-game stretch to the next thing is, like, it's impossible. To, like, the range of outcomes is just ridiculous. Like, you just can't really forecast it.
It is, but at the same time, they had a defensive identity last season before everyone started getting hurt.
Yeah.
You know, they were whatever they were, 12th. And then they got hurt, and it all started falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
This, like, those first 10 games, it felt like, okay, that what happened last year was real. It is now carrying over. Okay, let's go. Like, this, I'm going to assume that this team going forward is going to be a top half defense in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And it just hasn't been the case. And on the flip side, like, their offense has gotten so much better.
So much better. They,
so much more.
They have shown, like, a ceiling of their offense that they didn't have last year.
Definitely. I agree with that. They had games last year where they shot the ball well.
Right.
But in terms of...
It always felt like, okay, that's cool, but that's not who this team is.
Yeah, it always felt like a one-off or a two-off. And now we've had, like, pretty consistent offensive play for 2 weeks. And it feels good, I'll be honest. I mean, even last night, the game against the Knicks, like I said, that wasn't their best offensive performance, but it still was good enough. It wasn't like those performances at the beginning of the season where they're shooting, you know, like 11% from three or whatever it was.
Yeah. They're just so much more fun to watch. I mean, and you look at the variance of just how they play quarter to quarter even, and I tweeted this out today, like their net rating by quarter is 23rd in the first quarter, 19th in the second in the third quarter in net rating and on the season, and then back down to 28th. I mean, they're just kind of, I mean, they're just all over the place because this is, to me, this is a part of the story of, I think this will be just kind of the story of the season, is we're kind of watching to track, like, oh, they're a good defensive team. No, they're a good offensive team. And, like, maybe this next 10 games, they'll be back to a good defensive team and their shots won't fall. I mean, this is just this young team. I think it also has to do with the fact that they are really leaning into experimentation with lineups, to where you're kind of getting different mixes and different teams. I mean, they put out, they called it, or Mark called it, the bomber lineup. I barely got the words out. I was like, Mark, you put out this lineup at the end of the third quarter, and goes, the bomber lineup. And I was like, okay. And like, they tried that. You know, it had Isaiah Joe and Lindy Waters in the lineup with Muscala, which, you know, get well soon, Mike Muscala, who broke his finger. Feel bad for him. But, yeah, I mean, they're just – and why not? Like, why would you limit yourself to nine guys when the goals of the team are, like, well stated that development, like, is – that's the goal, right? Like, that's where they're headed. They're not going to lock into nine guys. They're going to be shuffling through guys. I mean, Usman Jang was like a huge part, or at least part of the rotation, you know, the first few games. Yeah. And then now he's been with the G League for 2 weeks. I mean, I just think, and I think that's going to be the case as we go through the season. They may cycle through two-way guys. They may, who knows what they'll do. There'll be small changes here and there. But this is just going to be the way that it is. I think it's going to be up and down. I think there's going to be a stretch at some point in the season where the offense and the defense, what's up, Hank, really matches up. And then I think there's going to be times where they are like the 23rd ranked team in the league for four quarters, for like five games. We're like, what's wrong with the Thunder? Well, you can go ahead and say, before this stretch happens, they're the youngest team in the league and the second youngest team in the history of the league. Like, this is this is just kind of what they signed up for when they rostered this kind of team.
Yeah, and I also thought that Knicks game was a good example of how good Shea is, because I don't think it was one of his better games. I think there were times during that game when he was missing a lot of shots that he has made throughout the early part of the season.
Yeah.
And there was a part of me wondering, like, oh, is this finally catching up to him? Like this, this amazing finishing at the rim. And then you look up at the end of the game and he has 30 points again. It's like, oh, okay, well.
it did feel like that though. It felt like, oh, this is a down game from Shea, you know, and the way that he's ascended is just, it's something to behold. And as Thunder fans, like, you know it not only just because you watch him every time he plays, but if you're listening to national podcasts, like, the Thunder are starting to get attention and he's getting national recognition all over the place. And he's been that good. Yeah, in that game, he played 35 minutes, had 35-7, a block and a steal, 9-22 from the field, 12-13 from the free throw line. I mean, that was just kind of a ho-hum Shea night where it's like, yeah, he didn't play that great. Like, he's 35-7.
Yeah. You
know? It's just absurd what he's been able to do.
So tonight, right, Wednesday night, they're playing the Nuggets.
Yep.
Who had, I mean, probably one of the worst losses of the season.
Oh, yeah. They laid an egg to Alec Burks. Basically,
yeah, Alec Burks and Bogdanovich, which it's so crazy. Oh my gosh, the four leading scorers for the Pistons last night.
I know. I'm going to read
Bogdanovich, 22 points. Alec Burks, 21 points. Kevin Knox, the second, 17 points. 17, Marvin Bagley, the third, 14 points. That is who's scoring points in a win for the Detroit Pistons, who have won 63 games of the last three seasons. How is that even possible that is who's scoring the most points on your team?
I know. No Cade. I mean, it's really bad. It's a really bad loss. And I know, like, the circumstances were that you had Murray and Jokic coming out of COVID protocols, and they didn't even know if they'd be playing that night, but Jokic still had 30. And
He almost had a 30-point triple-double. He was 31, 9, and 10.
You have to beat that Detroit team. That Detroit team is really bad, you know. And it's, I don't know. It also, that Detroit team, it also points to, like, what are they doing, you know? Like, what are we doing here whenever you're, and I'm, like, trying to develop Marvin Bagley, that's kind of like a whatever thing to me. Like, I just don't think he's very good.
Yeah, it's your business.
But
I'm not interested.
But the Alec Burks, like, trading for Alec Burks and trading for Bogdanovich and bringing those guys in, and they win you this rando game. Like, if you're this bad and Cade Cunningham's sitting, I don't want any part of an Alec Burks Bogdanovich victory. Like, I don't want that. Don't do that to me. That is actually detrimental to the team, because Alec Burks and Bogdanovich, I don't know, they gave him an extension, but it's kind of like a fake extension because it's not a long one. But What are those guys doing for you long term? I mean, we're talking about Cade in his prime. Bogdanovich will probably be retired by the time he's in his prime. I mean, to me, it's just kind of wild that this is their approach. I just don't get it. And it's like, cool, you beat the Nuggets, but, like, long term, what is this doing for you?
I don't know. And they, you know, they're playing their young guys like that they have. I mean, Jaden Ivey playing 26 minutes a game. Like,
yeah.
Jalen Durns was at 26 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's just that once you take Cade out of there, those are really the only two guys that I'm, like, super interested. Did you see the report from Jake Fisher that Detroit is... you never know with these reports who's releasing it. But so it could be framed in a way that it doesn't mean anything.
Well,
but
say the whole report, yeah.
Yeah, well, let me get the exact wording because I don't want to. It's about Sadiq Bey, though. Mm-hmm. And the basic idea is that they are listening to offers.
Yeah.
Now, that could mean... okay, here it is. Detroit has taken early calls on Sadiq Bey from inquiring teams. So that just means that they've answered the phone.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
6 a.m. and 9 a.m., they're
report.
Talking to people about Sadiq Bey. Yeah, early calls.
Because I wonder if that means that the inquiring teams were, I mean, why would they tell Jake Fisher that unless they were a little surprised at the reaction they got from Detroit when they picked up the phone?
Yeah. And if you're Detroit, I mean, Sadiq is a good player, but Sadiq is not a guy that's going to be the difference between you mattering and not mattering in the NBA. You know,
he's not. But at the same time, like, once you get past Cade, Jaden Ivey, and Jalen Duren, like,
I know.
What are you super excited about? Like, Bay would be the next guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know some people are excited about Isaiah Stewart. I'm whatever on Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. It is weird. It is just weird more than it is anything. You know,
I'd be interested to see what they could get for Sadiq Bey because, you know, he's obviously still very young and he has been a good 3-point shooter in the past, although he did only shoot 35% last year.
Yeah.
But he did shoot 38% his rookie year. I think he set some rookie records for threes.
He scored 50 in a game.
He scored 50 in a game. He's still only 23. I don't know. I understand why teams are calling about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's big.
He's beefy.
He's beefy.
He was good against the Thunder the other night.
He was good.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a weird one to me. I mean, if I'm the Pistons, I'm not taking calls on like very many young guys or really any of those young guys. I just want to see it develop, you know.
I agree.
It's just
I guess the thing with Detroit is just like imagine if Shea went out. Okay, the Thunder would be terrible and they'd probably lose a lot of games, but yeah. You could see them winning a game.
Yeah.
If they did win a game, it's likely going to be because of young guys on their team.
It would only be because of young guys because they don't play any vets.
And even if they do, it's not like Kendrick is going to go for, you know, 25 or whatever. That is just so weird to me. Like once you remove Cade from the equation, all of a sudden I'm like watching that Detroit team. Like, what are we doing here? Like, yeah. What is the point of all of this?
Yeah.
But whatever, it doesn't matter. They're going to get a high pick. They'll get Wembanyama and nothing will matter.
Yeah. I mean, the Thunder could get Wemby. We don't know. We just don't know.
We don't know.
We have no idea.
We don't know.
Yeah. They could have the worst record. I think Houston's going to have the worst record. I think they're... I can see... I don't know how long Cade's out. They haven't said yet, have they?
They haven't, but there was a, you know, one of those Twitter doctors, yeah. But like a real doctor on mm-hmm. Twitter, mm-hmm. Who was talking about how this could very easily turn into a season-ending
yeah.
type of injury if he has the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if that happens, all bets are off. Mm-hmm. I think Houston has a real challenger at that point.
Yeah. Houston is just, I watch them and think... There's no hope. There's no hope for a turnaround here. This is such a mess.
I don't think so either. Although, I mean, you've seen what the Spurs have been doing lately.
Yeah.
Like, what they've been doing is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
They, Bruno Passos, who was on Saturday Slam and Jam, he mm-hmm. posted the net rating in the last 10 games, in which they're 1-9. They're a minus 16, which is, like, unheard of. I mean, in OKC's worst season... which was 2 years ago, I think they were like a minus 10.6. Anytime you get to double digits, that's like pretty bad.
Yeah.
You were a really bad team.
Yeah.
They're at minus 16 over this last stretch. It is so early in the season to be putting up those types of, I mean, the 31-point loss to the Lakers.
Yeah.
And they're about to play them back-to-back again. I'm very interested to see what happens in those games.
Lakers got to get those wins. Yeah, this is what's kind of befuddling to me about the way that people think about the Thunder and the way they think about other teams is like the Thunder have exceeded expectations from everybody almost every single year, yet like they get thrown
annoyingly so.
Yes, yet they get thrown under the bus every time that like tanking is brought up. And I get why. Like they've made moves that have been a little bit louder than some other teams, but the fact remains that they have not lost as many games as Houston has. They have not been like so ridiculously bad at defense like some of these other teams have been. Like they continue to kind of be steady. Everybody knows what they want to do. Everybody kind of knows their goals and they kind of just stay in their lane. Yet like the narrative like swings so wildly with the Thunder where I mean we see them like now like Tass Mellis on No Dunks today was like they were like what team are you thankful for? Well, I'm thankful for the Thunder because they're kind of showing all these younger teams what they should want to be and showing them the way. And everybody's got all these Shea articles and talking about, oh, you know, could the Thunder compete for the play-in? And, you know, but yeah. Then like during the summer, it's like, yeah, this team is going to win 19 games or like this team is terrible or with Chet out, like everything. I mean, I don't know. It's just funny the way that everybody, you know, acts around them. And like, meanwhile, you don't really hear a whole lot from Mark Degnault. You don't really during the season hear a whole lot from Sam Presti. Like, they just kind of fade into the background and like just kind of just plug along. And it's just, well, it's just funny to me.
It really is wild to go back and look at who they actually traded. And like, I wish I could be on one of these podcasts and ask them who should they not have traded.
Yeah.
Should they not have traded Dennis Schroeder on an expiring who's like basically out of the league on a minimum at this point?
Right.
Should it have been Ricky Rubio, who tore his ACL, basically out of the league? Danilo Gallinari, who was on expiring, out of the league.
Kelly Oubre?
Yeah, like Kelly Oubre, who's taken the eighth most shots in the league.
Can you believe that?
And is clearly not good. Wild? Like, even Steven Adams, who did eventually bounce back in Memphis, like that first year in New Orleans, like it was the same thing where it was like, man, I'm kind of glad they got off of Steven Adams at this point.
Yeah.
Really, the only player who has like exceeded expectations that they traded was Chris Paul,
yeah,
who I think we all agree was never going to be here long term. The fact that he released that video the second they got
the bubble ends and it's like, it's been great, you guys. Like, this has been really like cool.
As time's running out in the fourth quarter, yeah. Chris is already like recording this video. Right. Love OKC. This has been a super fun season. So like, I just don't know. And can you imagine if this was a dumber organization and they had actually like, you know, caught the playoff bug, oh, brought back that team, how bad that would be for 24-year-old Shea to be surrounded by all these old guys who at that point would be on terrible deals.
We'd have the Donovan Mitchell situation in Oklahoma City right now.
Without any of, like, whatever success Utah had.
Yeah, and people are talking about Chris. Chris hasn't played most of this season.
Yeah, true.
And so, it to me is just... Also, does Shea develop into this player, not given all the developmental time, given, like, the pressure that they'd be under to make the playoffs? And
right,
like, yeah, does he become this? I mean, we are seeing it in Golden State right now. All five of their young guys are just cratering to the pressure of having to win.
Oh, my God. Did you see that stat? Points per possession per post-up.
Oh, no.
James Wiseman was last in the league at 0.2. He's over 7 feet tall. And
that's
he
really
is
bad.
0.2. Now, obviously, it's a small sample.
It's
got to
be,
it's more just the absurdity of how low that number is.
Yeah. It's insane. And they're all cratering. And some of it is like a lack of true developmental minutes for them because they don't get time to develop. Moses Moody, whenever they just had their exclusively young guy night against the Pelicans.
I know. That was a little disappointing.
Moody's like, not there. It's like, what are you doing? Like, this is a time to develop them, and they don't even get to develop them. I mean, it is.
That was kind of an eye-opening loss that they had. Because, you know, I respect them for, you know, wanting to sit those guys.
Yeah.
Kuminga shooting 6-for-20, just him and the type of shots they were. And then Moses Moody only taking 6 shots in 33 minutes. I mean, I love Moses Moody, and I still do like Moses Moody. And of all those young guys, I felt like, oh, this is the guy that most easily will plug into this Warrior system.
Yeah, I thought
so. And in many respects, he has been that guy. But it's still, like, the fact that we're even questioning Moody at this point, I mean, those were, like, high-value draft picks.
Yeah.
And right this second, it feels like they've kind of screwed up at least two of the three. And the third one's like, I don't know. It might be a little while longer, which is fine in some respects. But on the other hand, like, man, for a team like the Warriors to get that opportunity and how it has turned out so far. Granted, they won a championship last year, so it ultimately probably doesn't.
I would rather be in their seat today because you get a title, you get multiple titles, you have Steph Curry, you have all this. Like, I'm not trying to say like, oh, the Thunder situation is so much better than Golden State's.
No.
What I'm saying is, like, in order to develop young players, you have to give them the room to have like these high variants. And the problem with the Warriors guys, like, they haven't had high variants; they've just sucked. You know,
they mostly have. Yeah. I mean, they've each had their own, like, great games that get blown up on Twitter. And in many respects, like, stick in your brain. I mean, I remember last year, the way people were talking about Kuminga on national podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Way more than Josh Giddey for the majority of that season.
Yeah, no doubt. And I didn't quite get it, honestly, because I watched him too.
Yeah.
And it was just like, yeah, he physically, if you see him in person, like you're just like, wow, like that guy's got to be awesome. And he's had moments. He had flashes last year where he played really well, but I just don't like his approach to the game. And like, you can watch him now and say like, oh, he's not a Thunder player, you know? And if like you think that like James Wiseman, like, oh, maybe the Thunder should change for James Wiseman. We even talked about it last week. Like, they're not going to do that. He's like the opposite of a Thunder player. I can't make decisions.
I was only thinking about it as like a Galaxy brain.
Like a value proposition.
Well, that as well, because he would put up numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had moments where if you gave him minutes on the Warriors, he's put up numbers. They've just been terrible in those minutes.
He could be our Moses Brown.
And so, I kind of wonder if he would be and could help them lose. because now, you know, as excited as I was for the start of the season, and I do feel like the team is significantly better than they were last year.
Yeah.
The fact that they can have a 2-week stretch where they're top five in offense is just like absurd to me.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, this is like the all gravy year. And honestly, like next year will be this way too. I mean, to me, it's just
these are years. Next year's not gravy.
These are
next year. We want something, Andrew.
I know, but these are still. There's nothing. This is the problem that the Thunder have with regards to like getting to be a winning team. Like, there's nothing you can do to make these guys 24 or 25 years old, except for wait. Like that's. And they're going to show progress. I think they're going to make the play-in before all these guys are 25 or 24, 25. I think that they will. But that's when expectations like start to set in. And like Josh Giddey's 20, you know? Like he just turned 20. And so to me, these are the years of the build-up where there's truly not real expectations for them as to what they're going to do. I think they're going to continue to improve. They're better now than they were last year. The record is about the same, but they're not getting blown out. And they've shown the ability to be really good on both ends. You know, I think that you're going to continue to kind of see this build up to the team, and they have more players that matter. They're going to have more players next year that matter. You know, this is a year where it's just like, yeah, let's see what happens. Let's see how they play. I think making, you know, predictions for like the rest of the season is like good luck. Like, I have no clue what they're gonna do. I have no idea how they're gonna perform the rest of the season. I have no clue. They're too young, they're too volatile.
I think what's changed for me is just looking at the West. I mean, the fact that there is a 2-game difference between 10th, which is the Minnesota Timberwolves at 9-8, and the Suns in first place at 11-6. There's 2 games difference between those 10 spots.
I know.
Like, for all the talk about, oh, this team is, you know, whether it's the Wolves struggling or the Mavs are struggling, like even someone like the Clippers, like you think they're struggling and then you look up and they're the 4th seed at 11-7. It's like all these teams are getting by. No one's having the bottom fallout season in the West other than the Lakers.
Yeah.
Which was kind of predictable. And the fact that OKC is only a game and a half up on the Spurs, the difference in their point differential, OKC -1.1, Spurs -10.2, mm-hmm. and there's a game and a half difference between them. Like, it is not showing up in the standings how much better OKC has been this year, but I know they've been better.
But
just watching them.
Which is also friggin' great for the Thunder with regards to like the future, because like this next draft is going to be really good, whether they're picking at 9, whether they're picking at 5, or if they get really lucky, we don't know. But if you can show this improvement and still have about the same record as the Spurs, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Like that's the dream scenario. That is the hashtag dream scenario. You know, that's it.
It probably is. I feel kind of bad for the team, because I feel like
for like the players or for who?
Just because I think they easily could be like 500 right now. And for whatever talk there has been about OKC, it could be even greater. I know that that ultimately doesn't matter in the long run.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're having the type of season where I'm trying to think of like a comparable team. I'm looking at the standings right
Indy?
Now. Well, yeah, I mean, Indy. Indy is 10-6 right now. They've won 5 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
I think OKC is comparable. I mean, I think they're probably a better team.
Indiana. If Indiana called and say, "Hey, you want to swap rosters?" You'd be like,
"Yeah." Or even if they had a 7-game series, like I'm taking the Thunder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that as nice as it's been to hear people say nice things about Shea, I think this team's been even better than what they've probably gotten credit for. They've been even better than that.
Yeah. I get what you're saying. I just think, I don't know. I haven't seen like a change in demeanor from anybody as the season has gone on, from like the great games to now. Like Mark is like super pretty steady about how he feels about this process. Like he's very process oriented. And like, I don't know.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
I look at the upcoming schedule and think, man, this is...
Yeah, December is pretty rough.
It's a gauntlet. I mean, save for like a few games here and there. I mean, I can read you. They have a really long road stretch, and then they play at home for forever, it seems like. But like, until basically January, it's Denver, Chicago, Houston, which is like probably the most cupcake part of their schedule. Then they have New Orleans, San Antonio, Minnesota, Atlanta, Memphis, Cleveland, Dallas, Miami, Minnesota, Memphis, Portland, New Orleans, San Antonio, Charlotte, Philly. There's like five wins in there that I like, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable with them beating Charlotte and San Antonio twice and beating the Rockets. Everybody else, I'm like, man, I don't know. Like, they're going to win games they shouldn't. Like, they may beat Memphis, you know, in Memphis on the 7th. You know, they may be Cleveland and Cleveland. I don't know. They're going to win one of those rando games. But for the most part, they're already three games below 500. Where do we honestly think that they will be come the turn of the year?
So if you include the January 3rd game against Boston, I think that's 20 games.
Yeah.
In that 20 games, like if they went 8-12, I think that'd be a really nice run.
Yeah.
Because that would be basically beating the teams you're supposed to beat and then getting like three additional wins in games that you probably aren't favored in.
Yeah.
And so then they'd be what? 7 games below 500?
Yeah.
Basically in the new year. Which doesn't sound as good as the way they've been playing, because I do think they've been better in that. I think what is interesting is when their schedule eventually does lighten up, because like in February, and who knows what these teams will look like now, but that's when they play their three games against Houston, February 1st, 4th, and 15th. They've been like a 2-week span. And then they're eventually going to play some of these other bad teams. Like they still have games against Detroit and stuff, and even more games against San Antonio. I'm very interested to see how the end of this season looks in comparison to past years, because if they just play it out, they will, their last 2 months of their season will have a lot more wins than it has in the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to wonder about what's coming. On the good, on the good side, if you're someone who, you know, is hoping this team's going to continue to tank, I will say that the plus minus king, Kenrich Williams, I do not feel like he's having an amazing season, Andrew. That was one thing that stuck out to me in that Knicks game.
Mm-hmm.
And just thinking more about his season overall, he just has not been the player he was 2 years ago.
Mm-mm.
He was, and you know, I was looking on Cleaning the Glass. One thing that stuck out was how many unassisted shot attempts he had 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I started thinking back, like, oh, yeah, he did. There were a lot of times where, like, Kenrich would just, like, take the ball and do whatever he wanted with it and throw up a shot, and he was really good at it 2 years ago. And that part of his game has slowly diminished over these last 2 years, and his shot has not vanished. Like, he's still shooting fine. I think he's at 33% this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not that shooter that he was 2 years ago. And even defensively, that was something that stuck out in that Knicks game. It wasn't that he was bad. It just, like, the defensive impact that we had seen from Kenrich in the past just wasn't there. You know, like, I saw a play where R.J. Barrett took him on and he just bounced off of him. Like, mm-hmm. Kenrich just bounced off him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. How have you felt about Kenrich?
He's not been great, and yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think what he provides more than anything right now is just like a veteran presence and like a work ethic for them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's hard for me to be worried about him. Like, he's not.
Yeah, it's like, not worried. It's like 2 years ago, I understood why they played him over young guys, because he was so good.
Yeah, yeah.
And he, like, really was helping space the floor
as
a three-point shooter. Whereas this year, like, I can kind of take it or leave it. Like, if they want to play a young guy over him, mm-hmm. it's not going to, like, offend me. And I would totally understand, because I think guys like Wiggins or J-Dub are giving you close to what Kenrich is doing.
I would just kind of rather play those guys anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I would too. Yeah. I continue to be fascinated by J-Dub's on-off numbers, which I know is like small sample.
Yeah.
And I tried to dig into the numbers to understand why is it so bad, and I have no, I can't explain it. Like, it's not just offense or defense. Like, the Thunder play significantly worse offensively and significantly worse defensively when he is on the floor for whatever reason. Like, even more so than any other player.
Yeah.
For both sides of the floor.
It doesn't quite match the eye test, because when you watch a player, like, game. Oh, he's really, look at him, he's like doing some really cool stuff. Like, he can drive, he can look at the passing, look at his length. Like, he held up really well on Julius Randle in that possession, you know.
Yeah, if anything, he's the player that I come away from games most often feeling, man, I wish we could just, I just want more. Like,
yeah.
I want more possessions for J-Dub. I want more opportunities, because his arsenal right now, the way he's scoring, there's so many different ways he's doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want more possessions so that he can kind of explore that. And in that Knicks game, like, yeah, I thought he played really well. And then you look at the box score and it's like team worst plus minus, which I know it's single game plus minus, but it just feeds into this idea. Like, what is going on? Why is this? When is this going to catch up with my eye test? Because he looks good. I think he's one of the better players on the team.
Yeah. No, I think he's been, really solid. And there's been some like flash moments. You're like, oh, huh. Like he can be a really good player, and you can just plug him in wherever you want.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like him. I honestly don't do anything with that number.
I don't either. I just want it to change. I'm sick of looking at it.
I know. Well, and there's also the thing, and I think I said this on Monday, where you look at the plus minus, and this is just, I guess this is a credit to Sam and his people that just, like, they've done a good job drafting, and I like almost every player that's on the team, you know? And it's like, well that guy should be positive. That guy should be positive. Well, somebody on this 7-10 Thunder team is going to be negative, you know? Somebody on there is going to be. And who is it? You know, I know that, you know, maybe Darius Bazley is like the, if we're talking about like approval rating of Thunder players, he's probably at the bottom, but he's been their most impactful defender according to the numbers. I don't think that that's true, but he's been one of their most impactful defenders. And, you know, he's definitely not one of those guys. He still had those moments where you just know. And I even turned to Joe as he's jab stepping and said, it's Bazley time. And you can just see him just wind up and just drive to the bucket with just like no real plan as to what's going to happen.
And I felt like that Knicks game, though, was the first time, now that I went back and looked at his game log, where like he actually was getting the foul calls.
He got one foul call. I felt like he got bailed out like pretty heavily. Yeah.
That's the thing with Baze. Like in my head, I feel like he's actually pretty good at getting to the line. But then you look at his game log.
Never.
And that was far and away his best game in terms of getting to the line. And so, yeah, it kind of worked out for him in that, although it didn't because he shot 3 of 7 from the line.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the one after he had the big block and then he came down. And that was like one of the most Baze time plays I've ever seen. It was incredible. I loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
There's no like Kyle Singler, okay?
Yeah,
there's no where there's someone on the court and you're just like, come on, this is not working. What are we doing?
No, I like all the guys. There's, and like you said, with the guy like J-Dub, I'm like, I want to see more. And when Jang comes back to the Thunder, it's like, yeah, I want to see as much as possible. Alex Bolajack asked, do we need to be 500 for Shea to make the All-NBA team? Or does he need to play 70 games?
That's a very professional picture from Alex. Did you see that?
Yeah, let's put that back up there.
Nice headshot.
Look at that. Great headshot. Look at that.
You know, I was actually going to go back through and answer that question for myself because I wanted to know, like, this always comes up mostly around All-Star Game. Like, how many guys do you want to choose from bad teams?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a good sense of how often that happens for all NBA. Like how often a team that has, you know, like 25 to 30 wins gets a guy on the all NBA. I'm assuming it doesn't happen that often, but I'm sure there are cases of it.
Well, last year it didn't happen. You know, third team is Towns, LeBron. I mean, LeBron, but he's LeBron. Chris Paul, Trae Young, Siakam. And then DeRozan, Curry, Durant, Embiid. And then first team is Tatum, Booker, Jokic, Doncic, and Giannis.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. If the Kings make the playoffs and De'Aaron Fox continue playing the way he is, people will take De'Aaron Fox over Shea for third team if the Thunder have like 27 wins and the Kings are 44 wins and making the playoffs for the first time in 16 years. Like, that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, no question. As they should.
Yeah, I think this All-Star selection is getting spicy, Andrew.
Yeah, it's going to be
because there
really
are so many guards in the West who are playing well right now. And like, it's in Salt Lake City, so you know a Jazz guy is going to, like, Larry Markkinen's probably going to be an All-Star this year. If you have something like last year,
if they continue to play like this, yes.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, like, he absolutely should, but that's taking a spot. if Aaron or Aaron Wiggins. Now that's Wiggins, we got to start that campaign.
Bradley Beal, well, they're closer to 500. This is still the bubble year, 2021. The Wizards were 34-38 and Beal was third team all NBA.
Yeah.
He was also scoring leader that year too. So like you got to do something kind of crazy to get there. Okay, continue. Sorry.
I was going to say if you have something crazy like Andrew Wiggins getting voted as a starter happen again.
Yeah. There's no way.
I think Shea's going to be screwed.
He might be.
At the end of the day. Because there's just so many guys in the West.
Yeah.
And there's so many guys who are just going to get in. Like, Anthony Davis is going to be an all-star this year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's playing really well.
Oh, he's awesome.
And he's going to get voted in. Mm-hmm. LeBron's going to be an all-star this year. Like, Devin Booker's going to be an all-star.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm already preparing mentally for Shea to get screwed out of the all-star. Especially if, you know, we just went over their December schedule. If they come out in January and they're, you know, 8-9 games below 500, it's not going to shock me, Andrew.
Yeah.
I'll be mad about it. I promise I'll be mad about it.
He will deserve to be there. Yeah, there's no question. He's an all-star. I'm trying to find one. I'm at 15-16. I haven't found one yet. Andre Drummond. Was
a guy for a bad team.
Andre Drummond was all NBA in 15-16.
Now that's wild.
Now
that's crazy.
But they went 44-38. The Pistons did that year.
Yeah.
Would you have remembered that Andre Drummond was an all NBA player?
I only knew that because someone was brought it up very recently on some podcast.
Really? I mean, that to me is that
asking basically the question you just asked.
That is mind blowing.
I know.
And 14,
the league has changed.
14-15, DeMarcus Cousins was second team all NBA. I'm trying to find the record.
If that was the Mike Malone year or the Dave Yeager year.
Yeah. Let me find it. 14-15. I don't know. It's tough. I'll say it is really, really tough to make it. 14-15. Yeah, they were 29-53.
29-53.
The Thunder could be 29-53.
They could. Yeah. Oh, and think about All-Star. Like, guarantee you someone from Portland's making it. It's probably going to be Dame. There's another guard.
Yep.
Even if he's out. Or it's going to be Jeremy Grant. Somebody from that team's going to make it.
Yeah, they had three coaches that year when he made All NBA: Michael Malone,
Ty Corbin,
and
George Karl.
Yeah. Yeah, that is pretty wild. Yeah, he was 24-12-3.6 for the season, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, that's like the only precedent, and that's a long time ago. And there weren't as many good players in league in 14-15 as there are today, too.
Are you saying we need fourth team All-NBA?
Let's water it down, people. Let's make it less of an accomplishment.
Hey, honestly, though, if they do expand to 32 teams,
yeah,
doesn't something have to change? Because like the talent of the league, and at that point you're going to be excluding so many teams in the All-Star game every year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean we talk about this every year, like there are way more deserving players than 12 per conference.
Yeah, you could expand it to 15 and be just fine.
That's all.
No one cares about the game anyways.
No one. I know you did, but Thunder Film Room posted the clip from the Boardroom podcast.
I actually went back and like listened to the actual podcast this morning.
The Etceteras with KD.
Yeah.
And so was he asked specifically about OKC or just like young teams that he's been watching?
Asked about Shea to start with is how the conversation started. And it was about an off-pod convo that was had between them where they were ranking players, but they wouldn't reveal their rankings or whatever.
Yeah.
And they wanted to, quote unquote, give Shea his flowers. And so they started to do that. And as they're doing it, like they just start talking about OKC and how great things are in OKC. And he mentions Pokuševski by name. One, he says it was hilarious to me that he said he's a 6'9" player that, you know, is a good shooter. He's this, he's that. Like, it's just funny to me that Kevin Durant, who never wanted to be listed as like a 7-footer,
right,
also yeah. will not list Poku as a 7-footer, which he is. You know,
How dare he?
Part was kind of funny to me. But the fact that he mentions all these guys, like Giddy's going to get paid, and you know that he mentions Jalen Williams, he mentions Poku. It was just like Dort. I mean, it was just like wow. And of course, that is followed by, you know, there are many great artists on Thunder Twitter, and they started mm-hmm. making these little mock-ups of Kevin Durant wearing the jersey, and oh, it's just really funny to me, you know. But it was cool. It's cool to get shout-outs, especially from Durant, who, I don't know. I mean, he's far enough removed from his situation with Oklahoma City, but for other active players to look over at Oklahoma City, which have been, I mean, they've been mocked for years now about how their rebuild's gone. For Kevin to look over and like admire it is really something.
I thought it was specifically interesting how he brought up the way they played as like a big
brought up Mark. Point. Yeah.
Because obviously that was one of the things that came out over and over again in every like random mini interview he did since leaving OKC. It always felt like he was taking shots at the way they played when, you know, Scott Brooks was the coach.
Right.
So he's obviously been on the trade block recently. He put himself on the trade block. They just lost to the Sixers without Harden and Maxey.
And Embiid.
Embiid wasn't in that game either.
No.
And they had all their guys, like Kyrie and Ben Simmons.
Yeah, they're full strength. Yeah, they played terrible.
The question is, you know, if they get to the end of the season, he asks out again. One, would you have any interest in proposing a trade deal to the Brooklyn Nets to bring KD home? And how do you just feel about the idea of KD coming back in general?
No, is how I feel about it.
Like, no, why not?
He's 34. He's 34. He's 10
so
years
what?
He's 10 years older than Shea. This team isn't ready yet. I mean, this would be like a conversation that we were having about the Warriors earlier. Like, who on the Thunder, outside of Shea and maybe Lou, is ready to win basketball games? I would say nobody.
Yeah, but still.
It would be cool. Would it be cool? Yes. If it were 3 years from now, yeah, that would be great.
Hey, 3 years from now, he'll be 37. I'll bet he'll still be good.
Bring him back as a free agent if he really wants to be here. I don't want to give him a bunch of assets. Just let him come over and be our old man power forward next to Chet. And,
okay, so there's like no realistic package that you would be willing to to give up for Kevin Durant?
No.
Because it would still probably take like a decent number of picks.
Oh, you'd have to give up Josh.
Young players.
You have to give up Josh and you have to give up picks. And the answer is just no.
Okay, let me ask you this question then, because this was proposed to us by @405fan on Twitter.
Okay.
You have a deal in place for a star. So mm-hmm. let's say it's a non-KD star. It's someone you're excited about.
Yeah, better be a non-KD star. Yeah.
You can either give 5 of OKC's own first rounders and swaps into the future, or 5 of the main Rockets, Clippers picks and swaps you have left. Mm-hmm. Which are you trading?
Their own.
Their own. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're feeling confident enough in those, in OKC being good and those picks having less value.
Yes. Yes. And they're, and the, like, there's just going to, I mean, who knows? What are the Clippers and Rockets going to be?
How crazy is that, though, think that this team might get to that point? Because we've talked about our own picks as just like non negotiable. Like, you can't even bring them up.
Yeah,
like, we would never trade our own picks. Mm-hmm. And now we're at the point where we can see into the future long enough to say there's going to be a point where it actually makes sense to trade those picks in favor of some of these other ones.
Yeah, starting in like 24.
Yeah.
I would be like, I'd flip a Thunder pick rather than a Rockets pick or a Clippers pick.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. There's no doubt about it to me.
Hey, man, that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Yeah, this is the thing. Like, again, this is the gravy year. This is the season where, like, you just can sit back and enjoy it. And if they win, that's great. Winning is enjoyable. We've seen that this season. Like, that game winner from Shea, incredible.
Fun.
That was one of the most fun nights that I've had as a NBA observer in a long time. And then if they lose, go watch a little bit of college basketball. because there's some really, really good players outside of Wimby and Scoot, which is the only thing that NBA podcasters know how to say. Wimby and Scoot, Wimby and Scoot. But there are a lot of really good players in college basketball this year. And if you can get somebody, I mean, that's somebody in the top five. I mean, you're getting so much closer to being set, like as your roster being set, if you can do that. And then you start getting the Rockets picks the next year. So
yeah.
To me, like, just like, this is just a year where it's like, sip, like, just enjoy like the whole ride, because one, there's a lot of really great players. No matter who's in or out of the lineup, there's always somebody to watch that's really fun. And then they have a real chance to be really good. I gotta go because I'm having some sick kid problems at
my house.
Whoa,
I hear them yelling.
So hope you guys have a great Wednesday. Have a great Thanksgiving. Really thankful for all of our listeners. We will talk to you guys again on Friday.